Good morning and Happy New Year. We have four cases scheduled for argument this morning. We understand counsel in the first case announced ready and declared the amount of time that they'd like to take for their arguments, so we'll call that case now. Larry York, doing business as York Tank Trucks versus the State of Texas in Wise County.
May it please the court, my name is Sam Bishop. I'm here on behalf of appellant Larry York. I have asked for 15 minutes for opening argument and 5 minutes for rebuttal. Because of the many issues that have been raised by the defendants, both jurisdictional and defensive, in the court below and in here, I certainly don't have time to address each of those issues, but I'd like to focus on two primary issues that I think will decide this appeal, both with regard to the takings claim and with regard to the declaratory judgment action. First, with regard to the takings claim, in addressing the many issues in my brief, I have endeavored to address all of those issues in detail with supporting authority, as demonstrated by the length of the brief. But in addressing those issues, I feel that perhaps I may have missed a little bit the overall picture in failing to perhaps make clear the distinction between the takings claim and the declaratory judgment action as far as this appeal is concerned, because many of the issues there focus on whether or not the justice court had jurisdiction to act under the bankruptcy stay and the exception. However, I believe that with regard to the takings claim, that regardless of whether that court had jurisdiction to act, regardless of whether this court finds that judgment was entered with jurisdiction or without jurisdiction, the taking still occurred. There was a compensable taking regardless of whether that action was valid or invalid. And as far as addressing that issue, all that a plaintiff must do to overcome a pleaded jurisdiction based upon immunity for a takings claim is to plead a valid takings claim. It is the Constitution itself which waives immunity in such circumstances. The elements of a takings claim are an intentional act that resulted in a taking for public use. And our pleadings demonstrate each of these elements. We demonstrate a number of intentional acts, including the taking of the trailer, placing it into an impound lot for 4 or 5 months to where the plaintiff could not use or access the trailer, the petition to dispose of it under Chapter 47, seeking its disposition and award to Appalese, and obtaining that award and then transferring that trailer to a lot owned by Wise County, where it has since been locked and the markings for the appellant's business removed from the trailer. I think all of these demonstrate intentional acts that have resulted in a taking. In fact, the law as cited in the brief shows that a taking, physical possession, is categorically a taking. The only question whether or not there's been a taking is when you have some sort of statutory regulation or municipal regulation that interferes with the use, and the question is whether or not that interference is sufficient to constitute a taking. Here there's no question. The final element is the public use, and in that regard the courts have focused on whether or not so much on the actual use that the property has been put to, but more of the rights that the entity has acquired through the taking. In this case, they obtained the order of the justice court that awarded them title and possession of the property to use and dispose of under the terms of that judgment as they saw fit. I believe that gives them an unquestionable right to use this property for public use. Additionally, I would point out to the court that the law that states that those pleadings of the plaintiff are to be taken as true by this court, and those pleadings liberally construed to determine the intent of the pleader. Additionally,
Doesn't it all still come back to the judgment? Because can you really have a takings claim if there's a valid judgment awarding possession to the state?
Well, I would argue yes, you may. A perfect example would be eminent domain cases where they take property. They do it lawfully, pursuant to a procedure, and they must then provide just compensation for that taking. My further point on the pleading issue is that if this court finds that the pleadings are deficient in any way, a plaintiff must be afforded an opportunity to amend, and that a case should not be dismissed under jurisdictional issues unless it appears that it would be impossible for the plaintiff to plead a valid takings claim. And in this case, if additional pleadings would be necessary on the public use issue, plaintiff could certainly amend to add additional issues or additional pleadings. In fact, in this case, the deposition of Chief Deputy Doug Whitehead of the Wise County Sheriff's Department was taken. In that, he testified that his intention was to take this trailer, designate it for homeland security purposes, and use it in the event of an emergency to distribute water to the residents of Wise County. So I think that certainly I feel that we've sufficiently pled the takings claim, but if it's in any way deficient, it can certainly be cured. And as such, that pleading overcomes all state immunity, both regard to immunity regarding suit and immunity from liability. And we would ask that the court reverse the trial court's judgment on that issue. Turning to the declaratory judgment action, in this regard, I'll focus on the issue that I believe is decisive, and that issue is whether or not the action of the justice court falls within the police or regulatory powers exception to the automatic bankruptcy stay. If it did fall within that exception, then we must concede that the justice court had jurisdiction to act, and that judgment became final, and the trial court would therefore lack jurisdiction to hear a collateral attack on that judgment. Conversely, if the action does not fall within the scope of the police powers exception, the justice court lacked jurisdiction to act, its judgment was void, could not become final, and was subject to collateral attack. The trial court, therefore, has the jurisdiction to hear that collateral attack and declare the judgment void. Is a little bit of background. The courts have recognized a congressional intent that the automatic stay provision of the bankruptcy code be construed broadly to protect the exclusive right of the bankruptcy courts to control the disposition of the estate property. And indeed, the automatic stay provision itself under subsection 3 states that it applies to any act to exercise control of or obtain possession of estate property. It is very broad. It doesn't just apply to judicial acts. It applies to any act. Conversely, the courts have also recognized a legislative intent that the exception to the stay under the police powers exception be construed narrowly to limit it to actions that are to enforce the laws as necessary to protect public health and safety, and not actions to protect people's pecuniary interests in property or to adjudicate those interests in property. And lastly, I'd point out that the purpose of the police powers exception has been stated to be one to prevent wrongdoers from seeking safe haven in the bankruptcy laws. I believe it originated from certain folks who were in violation of environmental laws and other types of laws that then turned and filed bankruptcy in order to avoid enforcement action. And that's the purpose of the law. In this case, that's not applicable, as the bankruptcy was filed many years before this property was seized and submitted for disposition. In connection with determining whether an action falls under the police powers exception, the courts have developed two tests, the public policy test and the pecuniary purpose test. Again, the essence of both of these tests is to determine whether or not the action is primarily designed to enforce the laws regarding public health, safety, welfare, and morals, or to adjudicate private property rights or to protect interests in private property. We believe that this action, this disposition hearing, fails both tests. Essential to this determination is it must begin with an analysis of the purpose of the hearing. We believe that the purpose of that hearing is clearly to determine who has the superior right of possession of the property and to restore that property to its owner. That is expressly stated in the Act. It is not to enforce any laws that have been violated. It's not to punish the violation of any laws. In fact, here, there have been no violations of any law. It is not unlawful to possess a trailer lacking a VIN plate. It's not unlawful to own such a trailer or to even operate such a trailer on the roads of the state of Texas. So the purpose of the hearing cannot be to enforce the laws or punish the violation of the laws. Additionally, I'd submit that the court in such a hearing does not have the authority to make such findings or enter such punishments. The purpose of the hearing is stated in that code of Chapter 47. 4701 provides that in the event that there is that ownership is not contested or disputed, they shall not even have a hearing. It's only when it's contested or disputed that a hearing will be held. And 4701A states that if there is a dispute or a contest as to ownership, a court with appropriate jurisdiction may hold a hearing to determine the right of ownership, the stated purpose of the hearing. That section further states that the court shall award the property to the person or entity having the superior right of possession in the property. Again, what the court is looking to do is determine who owns the property and return the property. Under the public policy test, the focus has been whether or not a determination of whether or not the primary purpose of the proceeding is to effectuate public policy by enforcing the laws regarding health, welfare, morals, and such, or the primary purpose is to adjudicate private rights. I think clearly this hearing it's one to dispose of property that's in the possession of the police. And if they know who the owner is, they're to return it to the owner. If they don't, they submit it there to the court determines ownership and orders it returned to that person. It's clearly to adjudicate private rights.
And tell me again what your position is regarding why you didn't have to appeal within the time limits required. You can appeal from a justice court determination.
A justice court decision must be, you must announce orally at the hearing your intent to appeal and file an appeal bond within 24 hours. My client appeared pro se at that hearing after discussing it with the judge beforehand and the officer, who said you really don't need an attorney. And he never came to our office until 2 days later when the time for appeal had passed. I don't believe that an appeal was necessary, assuming, which we believe is correct, that this judgment was void. Any void judgment need not be directly appealed. Laddie versus Owens, the Supreme Court held that. It's wholly unnecessary to appeal a void judgment, I believe was their exact wording. It may be collaterally attacked through any proceeding designed to find that action was void. Quickly, I'll try to address the pecuniary purpose test, which is similar, and its focus is on whether or not the is primarily designed to enforce state laws regarding health, welfare, morals, or safety, or primarily designed to protect someone's pecuniary interests and property. Again, the primary purpose of this is to protect the owner's interests in the property by determining who that owner is and restoring it to the owner. As such, I believe that this fails both tests. The action of the court was void because the bankruptcy stay deprived it of jurisdiction. And the action was void, and the court may declare it void. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Mr. Liller.
May it please the court. Excuse me. Mr. Bishop focused on the takings clause first. This is very little analysis done during the briefing. I'd like to address that first as well. It's Mr. Bishop's contention that all he has to do is plead a valid takings claim, and we have to assume that it's a valid takings claim for purposes of jurisdiction. That's not correct. For purposes of a pleaded jurisdiction, the Supreme Court has set out a bifurcated analysis of how you deal with the pleaded jurisdiction. First of all, Mr. Bishop is right in that you look at the pleading sufficiency. That's the first step. But also, you can challenge jurisdictional facts and defeat the claim in that manner. Now, we've done both in this instance. And when you challenge jurisdictional facts, you treat those facts as you would an MSJ. So what we're dealing with is not only pleading sufficiency, but also the sufficiency of the jurisdictional facts here. Now, it's clear that the statute, the Texas Transportation Code, Section 501-158, allows for seizure and disposition of an item without a VIN number as stolen. That's exactly what happened here. And it's also clear under Texas law that not every taking is compensable, that if property is subject to a valid taking or a valid exercise of police power, it's not a taking. They don't need to recompense the person whose property has been disposed of. So therefore, the issue gets right back to where we were at the beginning, the declaratory judgment. Was this a valid exercise of police power or not? Mr. Bishop also says that since he believes that you only need to plead the cause, that he should have the opportunity to replead. That's also not correct. Miranda in the Texas Supreme Court addressed that as well. And when you're looking at jurisdictional facts and you find that these facts preclude jurisdiction and it's unable to be cured at all, then in this case, he doesn't have the opportunity to replead. Now, Mr. Bishop has the burden to prove that the county court had jurisdiction over both the declaratory action and the takings clause action. The county court lacked jurisdiction because he brought the wrong actions, he brought them against the wrong defendants, and in the wrong court. Now, even if these pleading deficiencies are overlooked, we still have to examine the jurisdictional facts, and examination of the jurisdictional facts here show that this did, in fact, fall within the police powers exception to the automatic stay. This is a valid exercise of police powers, which would defeat not only the declaratory action, but also the takings clause action.
I'm not following your argument. I mean, who are you saying he should have sued, and in what court?
Well, he should have sued, first of all, in a declaratory action, he should have sued the person who he believed made the wrong decision, in this course, Justice of the Peace, Johnson. He sued, instead, the people who he claims received the property, not the person who did the act. The state of Texas and Wise County were awarded the property. That's their only interest in the suit. For the declaratory action to be valid, he would have to sue the person he thought was incorrect. Also, as far as the wrong action is concerned, this is what we were discussing earlier with the direct appeal. Again, the plain language of the statute under the Transportation Code allows for the seizure and disposition. And that seizure and disposition, in when you seize and dispose of the property that way, that property is assumed to be stolen under state law. That becomes a final judgment there. He's tried to argue numerous times that the property was his, that she was wrong, that the judgment was simply wrong. But that is certainly only addressable on direct appeal of that final judgment. not by collateral attack. Also, since the property was deemed stolen under state law, it's not part of the bankruptcy estate itself, since state law controls what's a part of the bankruptcy estate and what is not. And bankruptcy law clearly defers to state property law in those sort of instances. Also, in circumstances such as this, the bankruptcy courts have set up a system to deal with these sort of situations. In Child versus Hospital Staffing Services, the bankruptcy court allowed a lower court to dispose of property, but that lower court ran the risk that that disposition would later be found void by the bankruptcy court or on appeal. So it's clear that the disposition here is voidable, not per se void. Now, under this current case law, we allow for a direct appeal. We allow for a petition to the bankruptcy court to determine whether the state applies or not. Or they can directly appeal, and if they don't like the result, they can then go to the bankruptcy court.
Why would the judgment not be voidable if, as Mr. Bishop contends, it didn't comply with the statutory requisites? I mean, if there's not even supposed to be a hearing, if possession isn't contested, then...
I believe that this certainly falls under Chapter 47. I mean, if you look at the text of Chapter 47, this deals with property to be disposed of. It's under the criminal code. And if you can't determine who the owner is, then it goes to either the state, somebody that's allowed to handle the property on behalf of the state, or it should be destroyed. It has to be taken out of the public domain if we can't figure out whose it is. So, I mean, the transportation code and Chapter 47 work hand in hand. That's just the enforcement aspect of what the transportation code section is. The judge holds a hearing, determines that the property is unidentifiable, then by law it's deemed stolen, then the Chapter 47 hearing disposes of it in one of those three different manners. But Mr. York wants a new option apart from direct appeal and appeal to or petition to the bankruptcy court. What he wants is a declaratory judgment action tied into a takings clause action. Now, this has never been done in this state. Nobody's applied a declaratory judgment action to determine whether something falls within the bankruptcy stay or an exception to the bankruptcy stay. I'm not saying that we can't do it. It's just an option that hasn't been done. The problem with it is once you allow that, basically you've opened the door to an entirely different type of liability here. If he were to take a direct appeal, the takings clause claim wouldn't attach to the direct appeal, nor would it attach to the petition to the bankruptcy court. And I certainly think that if given that option, that most people would choose to take that option as opposed to going to the bankruptcy court, where they wouldn't have that potential liability against other parties. Now, those are the pleadings deficiencies that we found. That's the section that Mr. Bishop was talking about. But also, when we start to talk about the facts that we've presented that negate jurisdiction, even if you allow the declaratory action to determine if that disposition falls under the exception or not, the facts clearly show that this does fall within the police powers exception to the automatic stay. Now, Mr. Bishop has analogized the police powers exception to criminal enforcement actions, that he has to do something unlawful in order for the police powers exception to apply, and that's not true. Criminal actions fall under a wholly different exception to the bankruptcy stay. It's 362B1, deals with criminal enforcements. Most of the things that we deal with under police powers exception are civil. They don't carry any criminal penalties whatsoever and fall squarely within what we're at right now. The fact that Mr. York was not criminally penalized in this has no bearing whatsoever. Mr. Bishop is correct that the police powers exception has two tests, the public policy test and the pecuniary interest test. And bankruptcy courts have shown that passing of either one of these tests allows the disposition to be appropriate. And that's in Ray Chapman, the Ninth Circuit from 2001. Now, as far as public policy is concerned, Mr. Bishop is talking more about the hearing than he is about the statute that caused the seizure and the disposition. The statute really at issue is the Transportation Code statute that allows for the seizure and disposition of the property. Now, that statute's public policy is perfectly clear. If you read the plain language of the statute, it's to get vehicles whose VIN numbers have been removed off out of public domain, off the streets. That certainly performs a public policy, a necessary public policy, and we've given facts to show why that is the case. As far as the pecuniary interest test is concerned, the bankruptcy courts have set up four factors and clearly passes all four of the factors of the pecuniary interest test as well. The government did not seek payment as a creditor. Payment of money could not satisfy the violation of the Transportation Code. York's liability could not be reduced to a sum certain. An application of the Transportation Code was to prevent future harm, not redress past harm. In this case, to take a vehicle who is unidentifiable off the street, keep it out of circulation so that this vehicle was not perpetuated. I think my time is about up here. I'm going to pass off to Mr. Michel.
May it please the court. Good morning. Just briefly to add what I've been able to hear this morning is I view some of the issues that may be dispositive into two type of categories. One is the type of court that this should have been brought in. And Justice Livingston, I think you're exactly right. He had one of two options, an unusual situation, kind of interesting case law. The Chow case, I had to read a couple times to really let it sink in, this kind of bizarre process. One is the direct appeal route that he could have pursued. And interestingly enough, Chow says that's subject to being set aside by the bankruptcy court, should York want to go later on and challenge that. So he had one of those two options and did not select to choose either one of those. And so we believe that that issue is dispositive. Second major issue, which has two subparts, is the exception to the bankruptcy stay, which has been hit on by both sides so far, either one of which may be satisfied under either the policy exception or the pecuniary interest exception. The pecuniary interest section test has, we've set forth in our briefing some tests to see if that applies. And I think clearly this does not meet the pecuniary interest. Does not in that respect. So that example that the Chow case also gives is that the government sought payment as a creditor vis-a-vis other type of, to get ahead of other creditors, whether payment alone would satisfy the governmental unit's regulatory requirements, whether the debtor's liability could be reduced to a certain sum, and whether the government's unit's goal was to redress past harm. That's a Penn versus Terra Third Circuit case that set forth those guidelines. Clearly, this is not a pecuniary interest. The Chow case gave an example of where the Attorney General instituted an action on behalf of a supplier against a debtor to try to collect on the debt. That's the type of pecuniary interest where they're looking for financial, almost commercial, private type of action, whereas this case is clearly exercising its police power of seizing trailers without VIN, which is a public policy, which dovetails back into the public policy. Clearly, we don't want trailers out there without VINs with drug trafficking and trying to keep a handle on stolen vehicles, things of that nature. These were seized. Mr. Liller said, the Transportation Code works in hand with Chapter 47, the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure. It relates to the disposition of stolen property. We cited the N. Ray Thomas case that states that regulation of parking and traffic laws affect the health and safety of the residents. So I think clearly, under either of these tests, the state was exercising its police power, and it would fall within the exception. The court may not even need to get there because, quite frankly, I don't think he was in the right court to begin with. And I think the court can resolve this appeal on either one of those grounds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Michel. Mr. Bishop.
First, I would point out that I believe that there's certainly more than two means to challenge entry of a void judgment, as demonstrated by under Texas law. We need not go to the bankruptcy court to have that set aside. There is no law that requires us to do that, whether it be statutory law or case law. And the appellees have failed to cite that. In fact, there have been a number of cases across the state of Texas that have cited in detail in the brief that where they've used either mandamus or declaratory judgment to set aside void orders that are entered in violation of the bankruptcy stay. So I do not believe that our exclusive remedy was to go to the bankruptcy court. Mr. Liller raised a number of issues. I've addressed each of these issues in detail in the brief, and I would refer the court to that, particularly the law on the pleading of a takings claim. It's set forth with authority, Supreme Court authority, on what's required to overcome the jurisdictional challenge. And Mr. Liller has repeatedly claimed in his briefs and before this court that this property was stolen. And it wasn't stolen. And I don't believe that the law deems it stolen as he contends. We've had a summary judgment motion pending before the court on this issue, and the appellees failed to present any evidence whatsoever that this trailer was stolen.
I think, counsel, the statute itself, at least as quoted in one of the briefs, is pretty clear that, and I quote, a vehicle or part seized under this section may be treated as stolen property.
For purposes of disposition.
Yeah, and it's a disjunctive, and it says a peace officer may seize a vehicle if there's probable cause to believe the vehicle is stolen or has had the serial number removed, altered, or obliterated. So don't we fit that second category here in this case?
What I believe that this section does is it's a statutory exception to the warrant requirement that allows an officer to seize the vehicle to determine whether it's stolen. The question then becomes, if he determines that it's not, or if he determines that it is, what does he then do with the property? And I believe that that language to which you're referring that says that it may be treated as stolen for the purposes of disposition merely provides that you may use Chapter 47 as a means of disposing of the property. Chapter 47 is titled Disposition of Stolen Property. And I would suggest that that merely says that you may use that section for disposition of the property after it's been seized. And it's enacting rather than deeming it forever stolen for all purposes. Because under 47, the courts can't award it unless the court makes a specific finding that that indeed there's probable cause to believe that it is stolen. So it's not deemed stolen for all purposes. Finally, I don't believe that anything under the law mandates that this trailer be removed from the public domain as contended by appellees. Contrary to that suggestion, there's nowhere in the law that that's stated. In fact, why would we have a Chapter 47 disposition hearing if it's required that it be removed from the public domain? The Chapter 47 disposition hearing is to return it to its owner. Furthermore, the state law as cited in the brief provides that an owner whose VIN plate has been removed, obliterated, or what have you, may apply to the state to obtain a replacement. There's no requirement that it be removed from the public domain. And with that, I'd ask that this court reverse the judgment of the trial court and remand this case for a trial on the merits. Thank you.
Thank you, all counsel. The court appreciates your appearing here this morning to present your arguments. Case is submitted, and you're all excused. Thank you very much.